Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Our look ahead to the Georgia Bulldogs' return to the field against Kentucky on Saturday begins, at least briefly, with a look back on what happened two Saturdays ago against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And yes, I know, at this point in time, you're kind of tired of that game. You don't really want to talk about that anymore. I totally get that. I would not be doing it unless we had really good reason to do so. And the really good reason we have to do so here today is, I think, an uncharacteristically blunt assessment of the current state of college football from Alabama coach Nick Saban. And Saban cites the game that Georgia just played against Alabama 2 weeks ago as evidence to back up his point. I think for most Georgia fans, what Saban's about to say, and I'm going to read the quote to you here in a moment, what Saban's about to say is undeniably true. I do think it remains to be seen how much folks with inside the Buttsmeer Heritage Hall at the Georgia football operations, I think it remains to be seen how much they believe this is undeniably true, but Saban's words here carry a lot of weight. He was interviewed by Chris Lowe from ESPN.com on Friday, and Saban had this to say about the current state of the sport in which we all love. Let me read this to you, Nick Saban. He says, it used to be that good defense beats good offense. He says, this is Nick Saban, good defense doesn't beat good offense anymore. It's just like last week. Georgia has listen to this. This is very interesting from Nick Saban. He says, Georgia has as good a defense as we do an offense, and yet we scored 41 points on them. That's not the way it used to be. Nick Saban goes on to tell Chris Lowe from ESPN. It used to be if you had a good defense, other people weren't going to score. You were always going to be in the game. Nick Saban says, I'm telling you, it ain't that way anymore. I don't like it, but we just have to make sure we have an offense that's that way and that's explosive, which we have. That is Nick Saban via ESPN and the writer Chris Lowe, who conducted an interview with him on Friday. That is as cut and dry as I think you're going to get from Nick Saban in terms of the current state of college football. That good offense now beats good defense. He throws Georgia quite a compliment to say that the Georgia defense is every bit as good a unit as our offense is. But in a game like that, our offense is just going to be favored. They're going to score the 41 points because that's the current state of college football. And even for a defensive-minded coach like Nick Saban, there's no sense in fighting against that. There's no sense in denying that it's true. It's simply about building as good an offense as you possibly can, which means you make the best hires you can make, you recruit the most prolific offensive talent you can find, and you try to build as explosive an offense as you possibly can. And if you don't have that, no matter how good your defense is, you are not going to win a national championship. Now, we don't know that Kirby Smart would ever speak as bluntly about this topic as Nick Saban has, even though Smart kind of comes from the Nick Saban coaching tree. When it comes to being that articulate on this subject, I don't quite remember Smart coming out and saying it as boldly as Nick Saban says it there. But we should presume that Smart at least partially believes this because of some of the recent moves that the Georgia program has made. And I think with full confidence, we can say that Georgia fans believe this. Georgia fans, and on the basis of the conversation we've had since Georgia's lost Alabama, it's all been about how do you upgrade the offense? Is it currently a quarterback change this year? Could they get that done? Is it playing some of the players who aren't playing as much that could get that done? How do you get an offense as dynamic as the one that Alabama has and other teams have kind of put on display in college football so far here in this 2020 season? And obviously that conversation is going to be ongoing. And, you know, if you're a Georgia fan, what can be frustrating about this is it sort of seems like the only thing that you can do is be patient while what you assume is going to be an eventual transformation while it occurs. Because, listen, if you want to go back and watch Georgia back in 2019, Georgia was a long way from being explosive at all, not really doing it with explosive runs or explosive passing plays. And when you are as far away from the ultimate goal, being explosive on offense as Georgia was a season ago, the idea that the transformation is going to be instantaneous and it's simply about putting the right players in the game and all of a sudden you get an offense that explodes the way the Crimson Tide's offense does, that's probably a degree of wishful thinking that just doesn't make a lot of sense. That a transformation to be as explosive as the best teams in college football have been. And by the way, for everybody who kind of acted like the LSU offense a year ago was this kind of once in a millennium phenomenon, the truth is, for the most part, what Alabama has done, what Mac Jones has done at quarterback, it has really been pretty similar to what Joe Burrow and LSU did a year ago. And Georgia getting there is going to be just a little bit of a slow transformation, if it even happens at all. But the hiring of Todd Monken would seem to be a nod in that direction. The way in which Georgia recruited wide receivers for the class of 2020 would seem to be a nod in that direction, that Georgia is eager to make the change, and will just have to see how quickly all that takes place. But there was a reminder this weekend that patience in regard to this, getting as good as you can get now in the hopes that you get way better eventually, there is a chance in which that patience might be rewarded. There was an unfortunate set of circumstances that happened to Alabama here this past weekend. Jalen Waddle, the outstanding Alabama wide receiver, hurt his ankle, and he is now expected to miss the entirety of the rest of the season. Obviously, we would never celebrate the fact that this happened. We love watching Jalen Waddle on this show, and we never wish an injury on anyone. But while we would not wish this into existence, the fact of this now does exist. And the opportunity for Georgia to take advantage of this situation is now a little bit more significant. Here is Nick Saban at halftime after the Waddle injury from CBS.
Told about the severity of Jalen Waddle's injury.
He's out. He's out. He's out for the year. And it's a shame because the guy's a great player. It's exciting for college football to see a guy play like that. I hate it that he gets hurt on a play like that. You know, not supposed to bring a ball out when you're that deep in the end zone, but he's a great player, so, you know, you got to give him, let him use his judgment.
Quick aside here for a moment. Nick Saban never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity when it comes to showing a little class and being a good guy. To my ears, and I think to the ears of many other people there as well, it sort of seems like that Saban was blaming Waddle for the injury that took place. I guess if Scott Cochran's not there anymore, he can't blame Cochran for injury, so now you blame the player himself for getting hurt. That's a very weird comment and statement from Nick Saban at the halftime of this game here. And listen, I'm going to chalk this up to Saban just being frustrated in the moment, not choosing his words carefully, but those are undoubtedly poorly chosen words when it comes to Nick Saban. But as I said before, while we would never wish the Waddle injury into existence, the fact that it did happen is a fact that now must be reckoned with. And I think it creates an additional opportunity for Georgia here this season, even in a year in which the Georgia offense has been nowhere near explosive as the Alabama offense has been this season. The Waddle injury is just going to matter for the Crimson Tide. Now, it didn't matter on Saturday against Tennessee because Tennessee's not very good. But in a possible rematch of Georgia and Alabama, has the gap between these two teams now gotten a little slimmer because of that? I think there's a little bit of evidence to suggest that it might. Let me go back to after the Alabama game 2 weeks ago. Because Waddle's value in this game and to Alabama overall is not in just what he does. It's also in what he opens up for other receivers. Listen to Kirby Smart here in particular saying that the fear of what the speedy Jalen Waddle is doing opened up an opportunity for Devontae Smith to have an explosive play in that game two Saturdays ago. Here's a short clip from Kirby Smart.
They ran a bubble wheel where they throw the bubble out there, and they've got Waddle as the bubble guy, and everybody's worried about him, and Devontae slipped by our star and caught a touchdown.
So the point here is the fear of worrying about Jalen Waddle leads to a Devontae Smith touchdown, which would lead you to say that Waddle's loss for Alabama is not just his own statistics disappearing, it's potentially every other part of this Alabama offense now made a little bit less because Jalen Waddle's injured and not playing. So I've kind of thrown a lot of information at you here over the course of the last few minutes. Let me see if I can kind of sum all of this up somewhat succinctly. I think that Nick Saban is probably right when he says that this has now become a sport about great offense, and a great offense is just going to get the best of a great defense. We saw that 2 weeks ago when Georgia played Alabama. And for now, the Georgia offense is still very much a work in progress, seemingly a long way away from being as explosive as the best teams in college football. However, Georgia fans might still do well by themselves to be a little patient with this process as the transformation of the Georgia program is ongoing. Suddenly, Alabama in a potential rematch in December might not be as explosive as it was because of the Jalen Waddle injury. And there's only so much offensive improvement Georgia's going to be able to undertake in the midst of just one season. But all of a sudden, the feeling around a potential Georgia-Alabama rematch maybe feels a little different. For Georgia, it seems the job, when it gets back to football this Saturday, is to get as good as it can with the personnel it has available right now, and then Let's let the chips fall where they may come December if Georgia can truly earn that rematch with Alabama. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia, and we are glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. A lot of ways to get in touch. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you a part of the program. We are busy on today's show. We'll have John Stinchcomb coming up a little bit later on. Just a fully loaded broadcast. We really appreciate our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, Pella Window and Door of Georgia is a great company for homeowners to know about because they can do something big and great for you. They can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. This is a great thing because it really can do two things for you. It can increase the curb appeal of your home, which could improve the resale value when you're going to put that home on the market, but it also can keep energy on the inside of your house. Whether it be air conditioning, which you were probably running a little bit this weekend because it was hot again, or when the cold weather comes in here pretty soon, you want to keep that heat inside your house there as well. And those energy efficient windows and doors can help you do that and potentially save you money on your bills there as well. So it's great to think about our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Also nice to think about great savings here right now. Between now and November 12th, you can get 50% off qualifying installations or no payments, no interest for 12 months. Pella Window and Door of Georgia offers great warranties and unparalleled expertise as well. A couple different ways for you to get in touch. You can find them online at PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. As I said before, we'll get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a minute. Before that, let's go around the doghouse here today, assisted by AAA. And we started the show by saying that Nick Saban now says that this is undeniably an offensive sport, and it's explosive offenses that are going to get the best of great defenses. We think that's true. I think most Georgia fans think that's true. And there's a little bit of frustration about how far away it might seem that Georgia is from truly being as explosive as the best offenses in the country. But as Georgia gets ready to go back and play again this upcoming Saturday, I think it's probably appropriate for us here a little bit this week to spend some time thinking about how the Dogs can get better offensively right now. Not the miraculous transformation that might occur eventually, but the sporadic, maybe incremental, I guess the better word, incremental improvement that can take place here this season. And so over the course of the next few days, I want to look at a couple of key issues facing the Georgia offense and discuss how it can get better. You know, one of the things that I hear most commonly right now from Georgia fans about sort of specific micro issues related to the Georgia offense, one of the questions that comes up is, well, why isn't George Pickens getting the ball more? George Pickens was a guy that dominated the Sugar Bowl at the end of last season, had a great deal of hype leading up to the start of this season. But for the most part, the big explosive numbers just haven't been there for Pickens. He's had a good season. He still ranks among Georgia's better wide receivers, but maybe not as good a year as people expected him to have. Is there a way to get George Pickens the ball more is a question that commonly gets asked. Well, as we're around the doghouse here today, assisted by AAA, I'm going to go back in time a couple of weeks ago to when former Georgia quarterback David Green was here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And what we said at the time was, David, you played with a 1,000-yard receiver, Terrence Edwards. It stands to reason that you wanted to get Terrence the ball as much as you could, and Georgia succeeded in doing that this year, in that particular year, going back to 2002. How would you make the comparison then to you trying to get the ball to Edwards to Georgia now facing the same dilemma of, how do you make sure you get as many touches for George Pickens as possible? And what Green, who was a great quarterback at Georgia, said on that topic, I think is quite relevant as we think about the season's second half that's about to begin for the Dogs and for Pickens in particular. This is David Green on that subject.
Even though Terrence had 1,000 yards back in 02, we never once called a play and said, we're throwing this to Terrence no matter what. At the end of the day, coach calls play, and look, we may be trying to get the ball to you know, Pickens, or you know, my day it was Terrence. He may have been number one read, but if the defense takes it away, you have to go elsewhere. There's just no way to jam it in. There's too many other good players. So the best way to get George Pickens the ball is for other receivers to continue to step up and make plays. And when George Pickens has 10 catches and nobody else has any, that's a disaster long term, because when you play these better teams, they will be able to take that guy away, and you got to have other guys that have confidence that they can step up and make those big plays.
I think that David Green is right there. I think that one of the most significant issues facing Georgia offensively is getting George Pickens more involved in the second half. But I don't believe there's any kind of real shortcut that enables that to happen. I think the only way to get more statistics for Pickens is to kind of raise the entire level of the passing attack for Georgia. That is, the entirety of the passing attack increases. I think the numbers for Pickens increase there as well. Now, I've said before, I don't mind occasionally kind of forcing a throw in Pickens' direction because I think he's that valuable as a weapon that you occasionally have to try to squeeze that ball into a tight window when Pickens is involved. You have to be willing to do that a little bit to take some risk. We've seen Stetson Bennett, who has been the Georgia quarterback, do that some already this year. But overall, to say that you start a play, you know, designed to say this ball's going to go to George Pickens no matter what, David Green, who knows the position as well as anyone could, said that's just not something you're really quite able to do. So there's no denying that Pickens needs to be more involved. I think the solution to how that happens, though, is not a simple, easy fix. It's the entirety of the passing game, the level that needs to be raised. And if that happens, then you'll be able to get George Pickens more involved there as well. We're around the doghouse. It's assisted today by our friends at AAA. And listen, one of the things that we love about AAA is their legendary roadside assistance, but they also save you money as well. And one of the ways they can do that is with the AAA Savings Hack Pack. It's a combination of benefits that's worth over $1,000, and it's available to every AAA member, including free career assistance, identity theft protection, 85% off prescriptions, discounts on food and essentials while you're traveling. It's good stuff. You can go to AAA.com/go savings and learn a lot more about that. That's AAA.com/go savings. All right, we are very busy on our edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia today. You may not realize this, but the SEC season as we know it might be hanging in the balance right now. Now, the spoiler alert is it looks like things are going to work out okay, but maybe a little more in jeopardy than you might have realized here over the course of the last 48 hours or so. We'll tell you about that later on. But for now, on everything kind of in front of Georgia as it returns this Saturday against Kentucky, let's get ready to talk to John Stinchcomb right now as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Welcome in, John Stinchcomb here, the great former Georgia Bulldog and a terrific analyst talking about the dogs here on Dog Nation right now. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And John, if you don't mind, I want to kind of pick up here on where I started the show at the very beginning. Nick Saban really putting it out there in no uncertain terms that right now this is an offensive sport. He says the Georgia defense is every bit as good as our offense is, but in a matchup between two great units, offense is just favored right now. We've talked about this kind of stuff a lot before, but how much do you agree with Nick Saban's assessment there that when it comes to great offense, it is just going to beat great defense right now?
I think the way the game's set up right now, it definitely favors the offense. You look at the way some of these teams have configured certain plays and the way you can move the limitations you've placed on defensive back. It's all right. I mean, as a fan, it's exciting to see a game where points are lighting up the scoreboard as opposed to a 10-3 grinder. So I very much believe that Saban is onto something here. Now, with that said, the importance of a good defense, I still think it exists. I just don't think that the way the game is set up right now, that you can reasonably expect to just shut down offenses like you could in years past.
I'm being told we have a little bit of a Facebook video issue today. I certainly apologize for that for the folks who are affected by that. Slide over and catch us on YouTube or Twitter, though. It sounds like those platforms are working just fine. And this is a Facebook issue, so we're kind of at the mercy of them on that. So maybe Mark Zuckerberg can get off his couch and see if we can get our video platform player taken care of. Let me follow up on this, John, this way, in that I think for a Georgia fan, you're left to wonder, okay, well, what do you do about that then? Because it's not entirely obvious to me that Kirby Smart necessarily views this exactly the same way as Saban does. I don't believe Smart's quite has been as blunt on that topic as Saban has been. There's certainly some evidence to suggest that Georgia's trying to change itself offensively. The hiring of Todd Monken is a step in that direction. I think that Georgia's recruited the skill position players pretty well here as of late. There have been lots of high-profile quarterback issues, which is probably one of the things that's been a little bit of an anchor on some of this progression thus far. But you're left to wonder, well, how much better can you get in a year like this, given where you were a year ago, seemingly struggling in this regard, and you know, just giving some personnel limitations that you might have right now. I've suggested that patience is still warranted, that if you get as good as you can with what you've got right now, all of a sudden the SEC championship game seems more winnable than it may have, you know, certainly before this Saturday because of the Jalen Waddle injury. We're not glad that Waddle got hurt, but it is an opportunity now for Georgia to take advantage of. Football is a physical sport and injuries are just a part of the game. So, you know, even in the light of maybe Georgia not quite keeping pace with the most explosive offenses in the country, to me, it doesn't mean the season itself has to be doomed. What do you think about all of that?
I still think the arrow is up for this Georgia team and specifically this offense. Every goal that you set at the beginning of the season but one, which is run the table, is still very much on the table for Georgia. You can still win your side of the SEC, compete in the SEC championship, win that, play for a national championship. All those goals that you set at the beginning of the year that you've been working for are still very much in front of you. So the opportunity exists. There's no reason to pack up the tents and look to 2021 as the football season goes. There's still every opportunity for Georgia to have a historic year. Now, with that said, improvements have to take place. Offensively, I think what's great is we still haven't seen the best from this offense. There's still so much more to learn about them and the chemistry that they can create. I feel I have a totally different feel at this point in the season than I did again in 2019, where you just felt like, golly, there's just not enough gears for them to power up. And this very much doesn't feel like the case. I always feel like watching these Georgia games that I'm encouraged. There's places in the run game that you get excited about. You look at some of these young running backs and really some of the veterans and say, man, there's a lot to be optimistic for. James Cook, who has shown moments in the past, you've seen a lot more of him this year. Deuce's ability to read the holes, and then Milton and McIntosh, man, each time they touch the ball, there's a certain electricity going. And with these receivers, we haven't seen Pickens become the George Pickens that we know he's capable of, but yet we've kind of answered that question of who are some of the complementary pieces, because Kyaris Jackson has certainly had his moments this year, as did Burton in the contest against Alabama. Yeah. So once you're able to put these pieces together and threaten a defense for 60 total minutes and not just 40 against, you know, arguably the best team in the country, then there's something to be really excited about with this Georgia offense. And I still think that's very much on the table for this group.
Yeah, it sounds like we're kind of of the same mind here. John, my expectation is starting this Saturday against Kentucky, I'd be shocked if Georgia doesn't come out and play a pretty good brand of football there. I think the week off probably helps. And I still have very high expectations for the Florida game the following Saturday. Admittedly, a team like Alabama at full strength, I'm not quite sure what that matchup is, or if Georgia were to play a Clemson or Ohio State, these teams that I kind of view as the very best in college football, I think the jury'd still be out in a game like that. But the great news is, you don't have to play any game like that, assuming you do get a game like that. You don't have to play it until many weeks from now. I think the next few weeks are matchups that actually favor Georgia pretty well. As I said before, including the big showdown 2 weeks from now against Florida, I think we're about to see Georgia play a pretty good brand of football over the course of the next couple of Saturdays.
Yeah, I think they have an opportunity to really throttle up. And if nothing else, the Alabama game showed that we aren't quite there yet. We're just not. You know, we can stand toe-to-toe. We can keep the lead for 40 minutes. But there's still more that's needed and demanded when you're facing some of these more established teams like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson. Those are upper echelon teams, which Georgia belongs in that conversation. I just, having seen what we were able to do against Alabama, I think we'll be much better prepared down the road when this offense gets a little more chemistry and gels a little bit better, and you're starting to really gear up, throttle up, and there's opportunity for that. You look at the schedule and the way it plays out, and you can't really be threatened by Kentucky, but yet you've had this off week and had this bitter taste in your mouth of going, you know, we thought we were ready for this stage, but yet we fell short. So back to the grind, and what a great opportunity to do that, because there are some weeks ahead where you can work on what you've got going in your locker room and have to worry a little bit less about what's going on across the field front.
I want to ask you about the off week in particular here coming up in just a moment. Before that, let me remind you, it's a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with our buddy John Stinchcomb here, and still some time for you at Marlowe's Tavern right now to take advantage of a great cause they're supporting and also get some great benefits for yourself. You know, No Kid Hungry is a terrific organization that really helps to serve kids who right now don't have enough food to eat. And at a time in which schools have been taken away from some kids, that's a source of nutrition for many. That means the next meal for many of the children in our state and in our, you know, communities, it may just be less certain than it's been before. And that's what No Kid Hungry wants to provide answers for. And Marlowe's Tavern wants to show support for them. So here's what you do. When you go to Marlowe's Tavern, the one in your neighborhood, whether it's a to-go order or dining in the dining room there, either way, when you make a donation to No Kid Hungry at Marlowe's, they're going to give you a coupon for $5 off a future visit. So it's really the best of both worlds. You have a chance to help Marlowe's Tavern support a great cause and No Kid Hungry, but also you get great savings on a future visit to Marlowe's Tavern, and who wouldn't enjoy that? Please go to marlowestavern.com to find out more about this. Stop by, check out the tavern in your neighborhood, as I said before. Whether you want their great to-go service and the great care they're taking to make sure that everybody's got a healthy and safe dining option there, or if you want to hang out with some friends socially distanced and safe inside of Marlowe's Tavern dining room, either way, it's a great chance to support the No Kid Hungry cause and also enjoy some good food there with Marlowe's Tavern. All right, John, one of the things I do enjoy, and I talked about this with Terrence Edwards when he was on the show last Thursday, and I'll talk about it with you right now, is the notion of the off week itself. And I was of the belief that it kind of actually came at a pretty good time for Georgia the week after Alabama, a chance to kind of recalibrate, reboot a little bit. But specifically, logistically, how Georgia handles that, what has the last 7 days been like? Returning back to a normal game week schedule here this week, how would be the best way for Georgia to have used the time off that it had on Saturday and the little bit different kind of schedule that it was able to utilize during the off week itself? What was that like, you think?
Well, I think it's really the two primary roles that it can play is, one, you can get healthy. You don't have to play that Saturday, and you can get guys that have been dealing with some nagging issues. There is always something that's hurting at this point in the season across the board. Even if you're not showing up on the injury report, there are some aches and pains. And when you have this week, you can start addressing some of the things that you've just been tolerating for, you know, the past month and a half or so. So that's a big piece. The second is you can focus on yourself. You can focus on your team. You get this opportunity to not to prepare for your opponent, but you can do a little self-analysis as a player, as a position group, as a side of the football, special teams, offense, defense, where you go, where do we need to get better? What are the holes in our game? How do we get back to the fundamentals and address some of the issues that we've kind of tolerated and let slide at this point? It couldn't come at a better time for Georgia coming off this Alabama game, because you know, there was so much that looks good and you feel really good about, and you still should, but it also kind of highlighted some of the flaws that exist, some of the weaknesses in the fence, so to speak, that you have some time. You've got an additional 5 practices, plus or minus, to look at yourself and say, man, this is an area of my game, of our game, that we can address and get better at, because it's going to be important when we face any opponent on any Saturday, but especially the ones that we want to compete with late in the season.
So we talked about quarterbacks when you joined us last week here for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, and it's become no less of a hot topic in the 7 days since then. John, as an evaluator of the game, an analyst, a former player, what would be the parameters in which you would consider a quarterback change necessary for Georgia, whether it be Daniel's health, Bennett's performance, the younger guys who are in the mix here? What would you be looking at for you to say, you know what, maybe opening up this competition for somebody else to take some snaps on the field is the logical next step for Georgia? What would it take for you to get there?
Well, I think it matters. It's twofold, right? So you want to see the progression of the guys that the fans haven't seen on game day. So for a guy like Daniels, How's he progressing health-wise is obviously primary in his situation, but also what does he bring to the table that you think, man, we just can't play without this at this point? You look at who's a better example than Tua? Tua in college where, you know, when does he get his opportunity? Halfway through a national championship game and you're able to pull that trigger, and that has to solely be based on what you've seen in practice, that here's a guy that we can no longer take the field without him at the helm. And, you know, same thing with him at the Dolphins, where Fitzpatrick once again has had a stellar season up to this point and is replaced, but it's got to be more with what the guy that you haven't seen has done. And if they're able to make a change and justify it, it's because at this point in the season, you can no longer justify, you know, whether it's Juwan Mathis and the improvement he's possibly made or JT Daniels. You know, anytime you're able to say, we're going to go in a different direction, it's got to be because the guy behind him is just playing and practicing at a point where you think, man, we're just so much better off with him on the field than without.
You know, John, one of the things we love to do here on our program is kind of highlight when UGA and folks around UGA are getting involved with important causes. And you were telling me about a cool one before the show began today. It's called Trick or Treatment. It benefits the Children's Tumor Foundation. And I understand that UGA 10 is a part of this. It's kind of a fun way for folks to kind of, you know, both engage with UGA here a little bit, but also, you know, really support a great cause there as well. Can you fill us in on some of the details about exactly what's going on with Trick or Treatment as we head towards the Halloween season here?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty cool, and I'm glad to get to share it with you, because Children's Tumor Foundation, they're a great organization. I had a cousin who ended up passing away a few years ago, but suffered from an ailment called schwannomatosis, and basically he had tumors throughout his body, and we got to really know what the Children's Tumor Foundation does, and they're helping kids really across the world, but across our country who are struggling with these not so rare, relatively rare, but not so rare diseases where tumors are formed in their bodies and they're fighting them. So they started this fundraiser, pretty cool, pretty seasonal, and that it's Halloween, and that it's a competition where you dress your pets up, you take pictures, and they're raising money that way. And UGA, our own UGA, is participating. He's got his own page, and it's free to register your animal. But you can also vote for others. So UGA right now is barely in the top five. So for dog fans out there, if you want to see UGA dressed up in his Halloween best, it's a good opportunity to show your support for him. But it's also a pretty cool little competition in that it's lighthearted, it's seasonal, it's connected with Halloween, and there's some pretty good-looking pets out there. And when you vote, it's just a dollar. And it goes to a really good cause, helping kids that are desperate for these treatments and research projects going on across this country to help them find a solution. So it's a great cause, near and dear to my heart, and a pretty fun little way to show our Georgia spirit by getting behind UGA.
So let me give the website here. I'll do it a couple of times. It's my.cupids.org/pet/UGA if you want to find out more about this. my.cupids.org/pet/UGA. As John said, it's free to register your pet, and each vote costs a dollar, and that's how the money gets raised for the Children's Tumor Foundation. So really good stuff there. A chance to support a great cause, to be involved in UGA 10. We're not getting a chance to see UGA quite as much during the season. How about that? Connor Riley, very quick on me. That's not the easiest URL to fire off quickly, but that is there now on your screen. Very impressive all the way around from Connor Riley on that front. So we're not seeing UGA on the field as much as we want to this year, but you can see him as part of this great cause. John, also thank you for being a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. We appreciate that with you. We'll see for Dog Nation Happy Hour coming up on Thursday. Getting back on the football field against the Kentucky Wildcats. My understanding is it may be cold in Lexington on Saturday, so maybe on Thursday we'll talk about how a cold weather game impacts the Dogs a little bit, if that is indeed the forecast on tap for Lexington this weekend.
Well, I look forward to it. It's, I just am so thankful that we have a season to talk about. We're playing football, and in these crazy times, it's nice to have some normalcy where we're getting to watch our dogs take the field.
I think that's exactly right, John. We'll see you Thursday.
Can't wait. Go dogs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, great stuff from John Stinchcomb there as part of the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Let me transition out to our SEC Through, and we are jammed on our SEC Through today, so I want to try to get into as much of this as I can. The Auburn-Ole Miss game on Saturday was controversial because of what looked like should have been potentially an Ole Miss touchdown on what appeared to be an Auburn player touching a kickoff. Certainly the ball seemed to be redirected after coming near contact with his hand. The SEC, though, the officials on hand said they reviewed it in the moment, did not see evidence to say that the ball had been touched, and did not do a longer review to really try to evaluate if this should have been a fumble recovery in the end zone for a touchdown. Auburn wins again on what appears to be another controversial call after the pretty cut and dry controversy of the Arkansas game, in which Auburn probably was lucky not to have that call go against them. There was a little bit of rumblings after the Kentucky game there as well. So it sort of seems like Auburn has greatly benefited from some officiating stuff here thus far this year. My take on this is going to be a little bit different, though, in that in this particular instance, I think we all have to assume there is now an unwritten rule that on anything involving a kickoff, the unwritten rule is when they can call a touchback, they're going to. I think the one thing that the rules folks want to try to keep out of the game as much as possible is anything that looks like a scrum down near the goal line or anything like in a kickoff. I mean, some people have openly wondered if in a couple of years we don't even have kickoffs in football anymore. So the idea that they're looking to keep a live ball and a kickoff going any longer than they have to, unless it is obvious that the ball had been touched, for the most part, that's just kind of an unwritten rule that we have to live with. Now, more than anything, even though in this particular instance, I'm actually not that surprised they didn't stop and change this rule, I think it speaks to a real issue the SEC has. I'm going to come across as kind of a philosophical blowhard here, and I don't mean to, but we are just going to time right now where there's a lot of distrust of institutions, and I'm not going to cite any of those specific institutions because it has a tendency to feel a little too political, but you know what I'm talking about on a number of different fronts here. And I think the SEC is no different. When a call like this happens, there's this assumption, well, this is the SEC supporting what is kind of viewed as one of the have programs, Auburn, in comparison to what is kind of viewed as one of the have not programs, Ole Miss. I don't believe that's true, but I do think it's interesting how quickly people go to not just officiating lack of competency, but in some sort of officiating conspiracy. We just seem to get there pretty quick. And the SEC, when it comes to stuff like this, does itself no favors. Not because they made the wrong call on Saturday. I'm not quite so sure they did. I actually don't want a whole bunch of GameStop for long replays on something that, watching the video over and over again, doesn't make quite as definitive as the call on the field would be. It's not like things got way better because of slowing it down, watching it over and over again. Many of us have now seen it many times. But the SEC is just so bad at talking about some of this kind of stuff. You know, a couple of years ago, they started their @SEC officiating Twitter account, but they never use it. I mean, if you go and look at it on a typical Saturday, they never tweet from this account at all. This was supposed to be the way that the SEC communicated with its fans about the officiating decisions, but frankly, I don't think the SEC knows how to talk about this stuff. Go back and think about that Auburn-Arkansas game the other day. It was clearly a bad call, but if anything, the SEC's explanation of that bad call made things worse. This call's not quite so bad, but the SEC's inability to discuss this kind of stuff as a human being would, I think just creates the idea that Ole Miss fans, folks like that, feel like the league is out to get them. You know, by the way, these are just the kinds of games that Ole Miss loses, and for better or worse, the kinds of game that Auburn finds a way to win. I think it's interesting that, you know, Lane Kiffin has drawn almost universal praise thus far this season. Gus Malzahn and Auburn have drawn almost universal chagrin, if that's the word I'm looking for here. Yet, it was always sort of obvious that this would be a win that Auburn would find a way to get and Ole Miss would find a way to lose. We talked about the Alabama-Tennessee game off the top of the program. The big story there, the Jalen Waddle injury. The other thing here is some heat on Tennessee after getting blown out in the game, and people are citing how many times it is thus far in the Jeremy Pruitt era they've absolutely just been walloped, and you know, this game, another example of that. Pruitt had some unfortunate comments after the game where he talked about the gap closing, even though the final score doesn't appear to be the case. case. I don't think that's true. I think, if anything, Jeremy and Pruitt inherited an awful, awful situation. And there's going to be some national media types, and you know who these people are, who are now going to try to say, well, gosh, look at Greg Schiano. He just got a win against Michigan State week one for Rutgers. What's Jeremy Pruitt doing at Tennessee? That's a false comparison. Michigan State's also in a pretty dreadful way right now. Mel Tucker has inherited a mess there in East Lansing. So, listen, it's not my job to defend Jeremy Pruitt. I'm sure there's some Tennessee podcasts that want to do that. But, you know, this idea that you know, Tennessee's in an awful position because they got blown out by Alabama. There are a lot of people getting blown out by the Crimson Tide right now. A couple other stories to get to here real quickly. LSU-South Carolina was a very interesting game. First of all, T.J. Finley comes in off the bench for South Carolina. What a revelation he was. He is throwing the ball all over the yard. What's amazing about this is that, you know, I've been of the belief that, hey, if you're going to play well as a true freshman in this league right now, you better be a super, uber elite prospect. That is not what T.J. Finley was. He's only a three-star. He's barely in the top 500, and yet as a prospect, and yet he was very impressive for LSU on Saturday. Ed Orgeron a couple of times has reaffirmed his support for Miles Brennan as still the starting quarterback for LSU. I think that's interesting. This may be a little bit of a quarterback controversy in LSU between a guy in Finley who came in, played well, a guy in Brennan who's been there for a long time, family has deep ties to the state of Louisiana. This may get juicy in LSU right now with maybe a little bit of a quarterback controversy. Also, the other thing about the LSU game was not just the play of Finley at quarterback. How about B.J. Ojulari was flying around the ball on Saturday? What a good game from him. I was really happy to see that. And then finally, there's this. Kentucky, nothing offensively against Missouri. We said all last week that you got to be careful going on the road to Missouri right there. And for Kentucky, they didn't heed our warnings, and it obviously did not work out well for them. A little bit of a mess there for the Wildcats. I'm sure they'll play better at home, and the SEC teams have a tendency to do that, bouncing back after a road game. But a little bit of a tough situation there for the Wildcats on that front. Georgia's opponent for this week did not look good against Missouri on Saturday. Let me also squeeze this in here very quickly. A little bit of recruiting news I want to get to. On the one hand, Alabama gets a big win. Quincy McKinstry, that's a hard name for me to say, and I've always has been. Big five-star defensive back prospect. He commits to Alabama over the weekend, so Alabama gets a big recruiting win there. Also, Xavier Sorey, the linebacker prospect, on his Instagram story, Sorey on his story, if you're following me on that. He took a visit to Florida this past weekend. No game there in Gainesville, and I guess the football program technically was still under lockdown because of coronavirus. But Sorey, on his own dime, does travel to Gainesville. So that's one to pay attention to, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, I joked about this a moment ago, but I don't think a lot of us realize maybe just how precarious a situation we were in the SEC on the heels of Florida missing its last two games, having to shut down its program because of coronavirus, that the Gators are supposed to get back to practice today ahead of their game with Missouri this Saturday, and it's believed that they're going to. Scott Strickland was on the Paul Feinbaum show on Friday saying that they're expected to have five or fewer players in quarantine when practice begins back today. But imagine this for a moment. What if the practice didn't begin? Like, well, you know, what, and as it stands now, they still haven't had it. But what if they didn't have that practice? The house of cards that kind of holds all this SEC schedule together, that would have gotten tricky there at that point. Now, to my understanding, no one's gotten sick at Florida, so I'm not panic peddling on this. I'm just saying that the logistics of trying to have the schedule made more difficult if Florida's return to practice ahead of this Missouri game, which the whole thing has been reconfigured to make all this make sense. Florida getting back at it today is crucial for the rest of the SEC season to kind of stay on track the way it's supposed to, including the big showdown for the cocktail party coming up a couple Saturdays from now. Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland, before going on the Feinbaum show, also released a statement to some of his stakeholders there with the Florida program. This is what Strickland said about the current state with the Gators.
I'd like to provide you with an update regarding the Gator football team and the recent COVID cases within the program. Following our last road trip, we have evaluated all phases of team travel to better understand how we can enhance the safety and health protocols. Now, it's believed that a couple of individuals who just a day before the trip had tested negative for COVID through the SEC testing protocol developed mild symptoms that they attributed to allergies or the common cold and then boarded the team plane on that Friday. Those same individuals subsequently tested positive for COVID on Sunday of that week. Of course, our staff immediately began testing daily, and as more positive cases developed, all team activities were paused effective October 13th. Now, all staff and players on the Texas A&M trip were instructed to quarantine and participate in daily testing through October 26th, and that continues.
Look, I really don't know what's gone on there at Florida. I think the whole thing's been a mess. It certainly speaks to poor leadership, the fact they've had so many people test positive during the season. There's also been some rumors about, you know, how some of that may have gone down there. But one way or another, you know, if they can just get it under control, get back on the practice field, the schedule still remains intact. And more interestingly, you know, we'll see what Florida looks like when they start playing again. Has anything about this porous defense been kind of cleaned up? Or is this still the same version of Florida we saw prior to their two-week layoff? Obviously, a lot of eyes will be on that game on Saturday. Let me do a few national things here as we wrap up, too. It's a busy weekend in college football. I want to make sure we kind of touch on some of this kind of stuff. I think Notre Dame is becoming a somewhat interesting story. They blew out Pitt on Saturday. We've talked about, you know, who gets two playoff teams in. Is it SEC? Is it Big Ten? You know, Notre Dame, who I don't think is a great team, but are beating up on a, you know, soft ACC schedule right now, finding Irish remain a team worth watching here a little bit, because obviously the playoff committee would love nothing more than to have them in the mix. By the way, thank you to all of you who did point out after Friday's show me laughing at the notion that Penn State was a playoff contender. Penn State summarily goes out and gets beat by Indiana this past weekend. For those of you who noticed that and gave us a little credit for that, we certainly appreciate that. Another Big Ten story to pay attention to here is Graham Mertz, the Wisconsin quarterback, fresh off a big performance on Friday, has tested positive for the coronavirus. Those antigen tests the Big Ten's taking, there's going to be a lot of false positives there. We'll see what happens with that. Also, Gator Hater Updater. Let's give that to you on the way out the door here. What's the number? 1,458 days. We'll see you tomorrow at Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.